and gentlemen, it's the Stephanie Miller Show.
It is the Stephanie Miller Show. Welcome to it. What a show. 6 minutes after the hour. Representative Bruce Braley coming up. Actress Pam Grier. Eric Idle of Monty Python. Charlie Pierce of the Boston Globe. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
And Mama will be doing election coverage tonight with Larry King.
Sweet.
At 9 p.m. Eastern and also at midnight Eastern.
All right.
And I'm guessing that we will be cutting away to John King, who is the... He's at a different place and location every 2 minutes. I don't know how they even do it. It's not green screen. He's actually moving around the Gulf Coast.
That's right.
He joins us now from Alabama because clearly the Stephanie Miller Show, the nerve center of all that's happening in the country. Good morning, John.
Good morning, Stephanie. There's no way Larry would cut away from you for me. I know it's my life. I know it's my place.
It's all so incestuous, those of us in the media elite, isn't it? When I tell you about my morning lady, you'll know how elite I am. Now, John, you are in, right as we speak, in Alabama, correct?
I'm in Alabama. I'm actually right near Mobile Bay, and we're spending the whole week down here trying to take a look at both the economic and the environmental impact of the spill. The president did not send me down here to take names so he can kick a little you-know-what.
Yes. You are not on the ass-kicking committee. John, you know, I know this has had to turn us all like, temporarily into scientists and engineers, but I got to tell you, you know, just as a layperson, when I keep watching this video, I'm like, that doesn't look any better to me. How do we know it's better? Are we taking BP's word for it again?
Well, we have to take the word of BP and the government, and there's a lot of eyes rolling out there now if they hear me speak that sentence, aren't there? What they tell us is the outflow is down dramatically, but they're still having, you know, somewhere in the area of 14,000 gallons an hour. That's a lot. And to the we're all amateur science question, Stephanie, that's one of my big hopes down here is trying to find people who understand not just what we see on the surface, but what everybody down here is worried about is what's beneath the surface, what we can't see. We were in the Pensacola area yesterday, and the fishing captains say the divers that they've taken out, when they come up, they report seeing plankton size, so nickel dime, quarter-sized pieces of oil, essentially like those little tar balls you've seen washing up on the beaches, but underneath the water. And what does that do to the food system, the food chain, and the ecosystems in these very sensitive communities, you know, 5 years from now and 10 years from now? That's a big question.
Right. Well, you know, John, again, hard to understand exactly what we're seeing happening there, but in addition to this thing we just see gushing continuously, they're saying that, I mean, explain it to me, because I'm even getting lost in terms of what the difference between the plumes are, and I think just the general fact that they're saying what's amazing about this and awful is the degree, the size to which this has spread out already, correct?
Right. The Admiral Thad Allen now says instead of one big slick, there are thousands of little slicks. And that's what you see on the surface, the sheen of oil. And believe it or not, what the experts tell you is that's easier. If you see it on the surface, they can skim it and scoop it up and clean it faster. It's the underwater plumes, essentially clouds, traveling underneath. How many of those are they? How thick are they? Where are they traveling? And can you find them all? And can you essentially what the locals were explaining to us yesterday is there is equipment that you can put down there to essentially suck it out like a vacuum, but you have to find it first. And the question is, it insensitive coral reefs? Is it going to make its way, you know, in the loop current down to the Florida Keys and some of it around and up the East Coast? They don't know the answer to those questions, but they do know if they don't completely stop the flow soon, that it is increasingly likely that this is a problem for months and months and months, not just until they shut the oil off.
John, that was going to be my next question, is when you say this, you know, that it is broken into hundreds, even thousands, maybe of patches of oil. I mean, can anyone get their mind around just yet how long this is going to take to clean up?
Nobody can give us a reliable estimate. Now, the stuff on the surface, especially in the Gulf of Mexico climate, a lot of it will evaporate, they say. Months and perhaps, you know, even longer. Remember, hurricane season is starting, so the question is, can you have, a lot of people are questioning, are there enough resources out there to begin with? But what is out there now, you know, may have to come in from time to time if you have some severe weather.
Right. John, we're already way beyond my eighth grade science fair knowledge, but the amount of oil being captured is being ramped up. These vents right on the cap are being closed. They're trying to avoid a dangerous pressure buildup right in the ice crystals and all that. So So as we understand it, is it more and more each day is being contained as they close vents?
Yes, they've closed the vents, and they feel more and more comfortable, and so they're getting more oil now contained on the ships. BP says it will have another adjustment soon. Number one, bringing in a larger tanker ships to take the oil up on the surface. And number two, they say they're actually designing, based on what they've learned from this cap, designing a new cap that they think will contain even more.
Right, that's what I was going to – I have to ask. This is the next thing I was going to ask, this new cap. You know, it's like that question people always ask when there's a plane crash, like, why don't they just make the whole plane out of whatever the black box is made out of? I mean, it does spring to mind, why didn't they do this cap in the first place?
Stephanie, when this is over and people start going through the documents and the testimony about what was happening out on this rig, you're going to start throwing things. Because I've read some of them and some of the memos and reports, and look, they were behind schedule, they were over budget. And you remember Halliburton? Halliburton, you know, a lot of people who don't like Dick Cheney always use Halliburton as a dirty word. On the deck of this rig, the Halliburton people were saying, stop. We have a problem. We need to shut this down.
Wow.
And some of the other people were saying, we have a problem. We need to shut this down. And they kept going. And, you know, is that just stupidity? Is it budget pressure? Is it criminal neglect? I'll leave that up to the lawyers and the experts.
But
when you read this stuff about what was happening on the deck of this rig in the 24 to 48 hours, even 6 weeks beforehand, they knew they had some problems, and they kept going.
Yeah, well, I mean, if that, you're absolutely right. If you're referring to the 60 Minutes piece, among others, I mean, yeah, that BP was the one saying go, go, go. They were under deadline. They were scrimping on costs, and they were, you know, I mean, to me, I saw an eerie parallel with the mining disaster where they were saying just run coal. That's your number one thing, and this was seemed to be the same thing, is what's the quickest way to get the oil out? And they were, you know, it appears pretty clearly ignoring warnings.
And when you make the parallel of the mining disaster, that's one of the things that makes me a little raw, in the sense that now you have everybody in Congress, and look, they're good men and women, but you have all of them saying more oversight, more regulations. Why do people have to die in mines and die on offshore oil rigs before these committees, that it's their job is to have oversight? Why aren't they doing it, you know, yesterday? Why does it always have to be after something horrible happens?
Yeah, no, point well taken. I mean, I'm sure you've seen Mike Papantonio, the attorney, on all over, and I, you know, he's basically echoing what you're saying, that, you know, these are some of the most damning documents, even just so far, that he's seen in his legal career. So, you know, I mean, I think that, don't you think that, we were talking yesterday, John, that this is going to intersect with the Elena Kagan nomination, in that, you know, I certainly feel people are paying attention. We better not make the Supreme Court more corporate friendly, so, you know, this gets knocked down like Exxon Valdez, right?
You're nominating me for the Supreme Court? Is that what you're
Yes,
saying?
That's my point. My point.
I don't look good. I don't look good in robes, so I'm gonna have to pass on this.
I nominate you for everything.
I think that the tone. You're absolutely right about the tone that some people will be asking at the Kagan hearings about. You know, what do we want in the courts? Has our system become too pro-business or more anti-consumer? Maybe is the better way to put it. I think another point is that a couple months ago we all thought that, you know, the Kagan hearings would be the big summer event, and in Washington right now it's pretty much of a yawn. We'll see what happens, but there's not as much hype as we thought.
Mm-hmm. John, you know, I mean, it is curious, this whole, I know that, you know, you're a reporter, so, you know, you obviously don't report from a partisan angle. I do, but, you know, I mean, it just seems to me that, you know, we have still all these Republican governors saying drill, drill, drill. No, we shouldn't stop drilling. They're asking for the moratorium to be removed. Is that, I mean, to me, it just seems logical sense that you pause a moment in the midst of all this to figure out what's going on, don't you?
I think the pause, it's hard to argue with the pause, and some of the governors down here are arguing with the breadth of the pause. They think you didn't need a total deep water offshore moratorium. And, you know, look, there are those who are going to say they're in the pocket of the industry. The industry is powerful in the Gulf states, without a doubt, in political circles. There is, and you pick up some of this when you're traveling, there is an economic argument. We're meeting people in the hotel industry and the tourism industry who are just shattered because their June, July, and August reservations are gone, and it's their livelihood. There are people on the other side who work out on those rigs, guys who are making 40, 50 grand, who, if they come ashore, might be able to find a job for 20 grand if they're lucky. They might not be jobs, 12% unemployment in Florida. So there is a good economic argument, but I think to your point about hitting the pause button, double check all the safety regulations, it's hard to argue with that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I would go further than that, but I'm listen, you and I will go through my presidential platform later. But, you know, I mean, you also raise a good point about these people affected. I mean, that seems to be the other recent thing now we've heard from BP that's just not true. I think Tony Hayward yesterday was it said, oh, yeah, we're paying all these claims, we're paying them right away, and that's not the case, is it?
It's not the case that they're paying them all right away. In Florida, they've set up 10 offices, and the locals there give you a mixed report. The guys who are, you know, looking for a small fishing boat captain says he's now getting his check for $5,000 a month, which is enough to maybe bide him through, and then he'll submit a more detailed claim and get more money. It's the bigger people who have to end up in the, what they call the major claims process. If you own the marina, say, that has, you know, 50 boat slips, then you're losing hundreds of thousands of dollars. It's a much more complicated process, and those guys say it's all red tape, all bureaucracy, and they're having a hard time fighting through it. You know, I'm not going to give BP the benefit of the doubt here in the sense that they have to build up the system and it takes time, but there is no doubt that you have a lot of people whose livelihoods are threatened who are starting to get more and more frustrated, not just with BP, with some of their county and state governments and the federal government too, but most of the harpoons are directed at BP for a process they say is just too slow.
Mm-hmm. Yep, absolutely. And we'd all like to be Captain Ahab in this this analogy. John King, CNN's chief national correspondent, are you doing any primary stuff tonight or just Gulf Coast? We'll just be cutting to you for Gulf Coast stuff, right?
No, we're going to do the show. I mean, I'll do some stuff with Wolf from the coast here, and then my show will be mostly about the Gulf Coast, but we're going to touch, you know, out there in beautiful California, in Arkansas, in South Carolina, and a dozen states there. We got some great primaries. And
Nevada, too.
Yeah, Nevada's got a great one. Yep. Get out and vote. If your state has a primary, get off your you-know-what that the president wants to kick and get out and vote. we'll spend some time on that as well because it's a fascinating year. I mean, this is just a breathtaking political year, and we're not even beginning to understand it yet.
I will, the next time you and I speak, it will be when you hear John King from Alabama. What's going on the coast?
You'd be nice to Uncle Larry.
Yes.
I'm always nice to Uncle Larry.
Every time I say that, I get that he's related to Larry King. He's not related to Larry King, but I call him Uncle Larry.
Aww.
John King did not get his job because he's related to Larry King, because he's a fabulous reporter. The show is John King USA. See you later on tonight, John. Thanks so much.
Take care, Stephanie.
All right, there he goes. John King from John King's USA.
That's right.
John King USA, you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. I do.
It's John King's USA. The rest of us just live in it.
That's right.
All right. I never thought of that people might think that it's actually his Uncle Larry.
You know, they look absolutely nothing alike,
no.
So that thought never crossed my mind.
No. All right. You know, kids, I believe I have talked to you about the only thing that has saved my life in this L.A. to New York move, and that is Carbonite.
It's also going to save you in your New York to L.A. move.
Yes, when I crawl back to L.A.
You're crawling
because
back to
Broadway,
Hollywood.
Didn't get the memo, didn't go for booze and dope. I will tell you, the final plague has hit here in New York, and it's time for my escape from New York. I'll tell that story in a moment. No, we're done with that now.
Oh, okay.
20 minutes after the hour. Oh, wait till I tell you about my morning next on the Stephanie Miller Show.
A whole new level of disturbing.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show.
Stephanie Miller.
It is the Stephanie Miller Show. 25 minutes after the hour, 1-800-STEPH-12, the phone number. Representative Bruce Braley coming up in just a few minutes. He is also down in the Gulf to update us on what is going on. All right. So, you know, Mama moved to here to Calcutta.
Yes.
On a whim because Ed Schultz told me to. And then in a sort of a cable news version of Punk'd.
Uh-huh.
They got a studio in L.A. with no delay. And Ed's not in the same studio with you when you're in New York anyway. Ha!
So the only,
see if you do it.
The only reason you moved there is because Los Angeles didn't have a studio without a delay?
Not entirely.
Wow.
However, as you know, many plagues have struck Mama here in Calcutta. There's been a Giardia, which is a what is that exactly? It's a fever.
It's a pooping disease.
Yes, my dogs have been struck with Giardia several times. I think I mentioned last week that the vermin are here. The mice are here. The exterminator's been twice. And I, you know what? There were droppings in my dog's bowl yesterday, Chris, and
yes.
They look a little bigger than mouse droppings to me.
Like rat?
Yeah, Ben is here. I gotta go. And as you know, I've had quite the struggle. I was not allowed to put a dog door in here,
right.
Which my dogs are used to. And guess what I found this morning?
Poop in the house.
All over the living room. Yes!
Like,
diarrhea and pee-pee. That, and by the way, if anyone has a giant dog like Max, 120 pounds or so, that's not like cleaning up after the circus. That was a good half an hour job. That was, so I gotta go. I think I can kiss that security deposit goodbye anyway. But my point is, here's the problem, Chris. I need more handlers, really. As you know, I can barely function as an adult. I'm sort of like an infant that's been left alone in Times Square. Here's what I did yesterday. You know, our engineer guy's here.
Yes.
I was trying to listen to a CD, and you know how technologically impaired I am.
Yes.
I'm the only person probably in the world that still owns a portable CD player, because I'm a little unclear still on how to get a thing into the iPod thing.
Wait a minute. Well, then what?
I sort of know. It's just it would take me too long to figure it out.
What were those hours I spent over at your house in front of your computer getting stuff into your iPod?
What?
I need a refresher.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Anyway, so I'm trying to listen to what I thought was the second CD, and I come in, and I'm like, Bob, what is wrong with this thing? And he opens it, and he goes like, Steph, that's a DVD. You're supposed to watch that, not listen to it. He's like, okay.
You really shouldn't be single.
I shouldn't be in unassisted living. That's
yeah.
I fell in the shower. I told you that. I need, like, my mother's 87, and she doesn't need assisted living yet, but I do. I do.
You really have no, like, life skills.
No, of any kind.
How does one get to be 55 years old and have no life skills?
I can pull things out of my ass on television, which is why I'll be doing election coverage with Larry King tonight at 9 p.m. Eastern and midnight Eastern. Won't that be fun?
That's your one skill.
Yes. Well, as Michael Harrison from Talkers Magazine coined the phrase last week on our show, they are ass bites. They are things, they're not sound bites. They're things you pull out of your ass
yes.
at the last minute on television. They are ass bites. So join me for some ass bites. I'll have no idea what I'm talking about, but I'll make something up. Oh, you know who's the best ever at that? Our friend Rachel Maddow, who, she's, first of all, a Rhodes Scholar, the smartest woman in the universe. And I love during this BP oil spill, she tries to pretend like she's just a dope like the rest of us.
Mm-hmm.
We gotta find the sound from last night's show. It's hilarious. She had some doctor scientist on. And Rachel, like, well, you know, since I'm not a scientist, I don't really understand this. And then she rattles off something that would have made Einstein go, and the scientist goes, well, that's precisely correct, Rachel.
Wow.
I think Rachel's just trying to make the rest of us feel better. Well, I'm not a scientist, but as I understand it, more of the underwater plumes and the macro-generational, the bonding of the underwater sea life dead zones is what it was, yeah. And I'm like, what? Yes, you do know what you're talking about. 29 minutes after the hour, right back on the Stephanie Miller Show.
The defendant,
Stephanie Miller,
sexy. I sentence her to 3 to 5 minutes.
Can I get extra time for bad behavior?
It is the Stephanie Miller Show. 34 minutes after the hour. Oh, one really good thing happened to me yesterday. I'll tell you in just a little bit.
Oh boy!
In the midst of the vermin and the dog diarrhea and the general chaos that is my life.
Yes.
1-800-STEPH-12, the phone number, toll free from anywhere. We are joined now by Representative Bruce Braley, normally of Iowa, but in New Orleans right now as we speak. Good morning, Congressman.
Good morning, Stephanie.
Good morning, sir. When did you get down there?
I got down here on Sunday afternoon and went down to Venice, Louisiana, which is close to the mouth of the Mississippi River, where much of the rescue effort is being coordinated out of. And then yesterday we had a field hearing in St. Bernard's Parish, where we heard from two of the women who lost their husbands on the Deepwater Horizon rig. And then we also heard from witnesses who were devastated in their fishing and oyster businesses and also tourist businesses by this oil spill.
So, well, that's a great idea. You went there. It was a congressional field hearing, basically, on the impact of the local impact.
Yeah, we felt that it was important to hear from the people whose lives were being impacted the most by this oil spill, and rather than have them take time from their lives and come to Washington, we came down here so that we could hear from them and see with our own eyes and actually smell with our own noses when we flew out over the Gulf yesterday, the overwhelming stench of the oil as we passed over some of the worst spots on the Gulf of Mexico.
I hear that from a lot of, you know, reporters and people down there, Congressman. Well, I mean, what is your general assessment? Because, boy, it looks pretty bad on TV. You know, sometimes it's like they say, it's hard to even imagine unless you're there.
Well, I think that's absolutely right, Stephanie. Unless you are flying over the Gulf and seeing the enormous geographic area that's covered by this oil release, it's hard for you to imagine the rescue effort and how it's underway. Because, you know, when you hear that it's impacting the coastline of Louisiana, Mississippi, Alabama, and now Florida, it goes well beyond what any of the contingency planners had in mind when they were permitting this well. That's clear.
Well, I mean, that's exactly the question, Congressman, is it seems, you know, more than clear that that's where the string of lies started from BP, is they assured you they have the technology to do this, and if there is a disaster like this, they know exactly how to stop it, and none of that thus far has been true, correct?
Well, the problem is the story keeps changing. When this release first happened, when the disaster occurred, BP was telling people that the release was about 1,000 barrels per day. When we had our first hearing on the oversight subcommittee and the CEO of BP testified, the story was then 5,000 barrels per day. Then this week they were expressing great relief when they were capturing 10,000 barrels per day, according to them, at a time when the U.S. Geological Survey said the release was closer to 20,000 barrels per day.
Yeah, they need to stop using the phrase.
So
they need to stop using the phrase, "We're very pleased," as I think Fat Allen said yesterday.
Well, I think the most telling thing I saw was I was driving back from Venice to New Orleans in a downpour Sunday night, and out of nowhere in the dark popped this sign that said, "Damn BP, God bless America." And that's kind of the attitude of the people that we've spoken to down here.
Mm-hmm. Well, Congressman, it seems like there's so much to, I mean, obviously, you know, when we see this just on TV, this sure doesn't look like it's getting better to us. But, I mean, are you confident that they are containing at least some of it? And it really is not going to be contained until we get this relief well in, is it?
Well, you know, the thing that we could tell is there are enormous efforts that are taking place to try to contain it, Stephanie, but given the volume of the release, it's incredibly difficult to manage this spill, and that's why when this permit was issued and BP certified they could handle a spill of up to 250,000 barrels per day, it's a joke.
Well, and I shake my head, Congressman, when I see these Republican governors saying we shouldn't be stopping drilling at all. I mean, it just sort of confounds me that in the midst of this disaster, you know, they don't think it's time to rethink some things.
You know, until you spend time talking to people down here, it's hard to grasp how interconnected life on the Gulf is with good-paying jobs on these oil rigs. We heard it from the two widows who lost their husbands. You know, they don't want drilling to stop because the economic benefit is so much better than the jobs that they can get on shore. And so one of the problems we have is getting people to realize that you have to be responsible in how you go about granting permits as part of the leases that the United States enters into with these companies. That's why we have to do a much better job of requiring exhaustive environmental impact statements before these permits are granted, because the most disturbing thing is that they got less critical in their environmental analysis and looking at the possibility of a blowout as this project moved forward, which is the exact opposite intention of what's supposed to happen.
Congressman, what legally, I mean, you know, I see the president talking about saying, you know, making sure BP pays compensation, but once again, it sounds like something else that they are not being truthful about. They've come out and said, oh, yeah, we're playing everything and paying it right away. Well, that's not the case, is it?
Well, they've made it very clear at every public pronouncement that they plan to pay all legitimate claims. And that word legitimate is where all of the problem lies, because all these people who are being impacted by this and are being devastated economically, they need help now. They don't need it a year from now after an exhaustive, lengthy claims process. And we had a wonderful witness yesterday who is a shrimper who talked about bringing in 3 years of tax returns just to get his initial $5,000 payment from BP. And when he brought them in, the person who was screening his claim acted like he didn't even want them. Now, that's the problem, is we should make sure that this is an expedited, streamlined process. We need to continue to hold BP accountable to live up to their word.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I mean, that's what I think, among other things, that's the latest thing we heard is I think they've paid about half of the claims. I mean, it seems like nothing they've said, you know, is accurate thus far. So what do you think about the way forward, Congressman? I mean, I know that there's been all sorts of opinions about the response so far, but what do you see in terms of the way forward?
Well, when we flew over the wellhead, we were able to see the drilling platforms for the two relief wells that are being drilled. But as everybody knows, the estimate is that the best opportunity to intersect the existing pipe is probably sometime in August. So we need to continue doing everything we can to stem the flow of well from the wellhead and to shut it off. But at the same time, we need to employ every means available to protect the ecosystem down here in the Gulf to the extent we can, and to start the long and painful process of rehabilitating it. You know, it's just devastating being down here, because you can imagine all these people who have pristine beaches and rental properties, and they're getting cancellations throughout the entire summer because of fears over what people are going to encounter. The impact, I think, will take years to fully understand.
Yep, absolutely. Representative Bruce Braley of the great state of Iowa, always appreciate your time. Thanks for checking in with us.
Thank you, Stephanie.
All right, there he goes, Congressman Bruce Braley. Oh, we've got the oil spill. I have, a crisis of epic proportions here in Calcutta almost every day. However, Chris, you can confirm this. What happened to me yesterday? It's just another, you know, and I, granted, the highlights of my life are sad. Ed Asner told me
That's
I make him squeaky in his shorts. And that, it's not every day that Mr. Grant tells you that you make him squeaky in his shorts.
That's right.
Uh-huh. We were recording a commercial with him, and can I just say that I don't think Mary Tyler Moore originally had that voice. I think it's his gruffness that makes you have that voice, don't you think?
I think so.
Because he was barking at me in his loving, gruff way.
He certainly was.
Yeah. He's like, what are you talking about, Stephanie? Of course I know what I was like, okay, Ed.
He was great, though. He was very, very funny.
He's hilarious.
In his gruff way.
And a great activist for so many causes.
That's right.
Okay. And I've tortured him every time I've ever had seen him or talked to him in my entire life with my Mary Tyler Moore impression. And he endures it.
That's right.
And that's what makes him squeaky in his shorts. All right.
I don't know if that's what makes him squeaky in his shorts. I think it might be your ass.
Ah, Lord. Yes, the good and the bad. Oh, did I tell you my hate letter? Can I have my hate letter music, please?
Sure.
Yeah. Well, you know, another day, another hate letter, whatever. Not a noteworthy in itself, right, Chris? But this one from DS, subject line, curious. So right away, he obviously has a question.
Yes.
Let's see. Hey, Stephanie, I was wondering if you evolved out of some odd sewer sludge, or if someone took your whore mama's aborted fetus and crossed it with dog. Drop me a note if you can. Regardless, you're borderline cute in a kennel sort of way. Regards, one of the few people who wasted time listening to your excuse for a show. Thank you, Dia. Thank you for taking the time.
He actually took the time to write.
Thoughts.
He took the time to write that?
Yeah, I don't. That's the only thing I never get is what sort of person, what kind of human writes to a person they've never met and says, I hope you get ass cancer and die, you whore.
Well,
what is it that's going through your head that you think that's okay?
I get letters like that, too.
In what family is that okay? Okay. Sanchez in Montebello.
It just seems like a waste of time, you know? I mean, you have better things to just...
He thinks that I'm going to write him back, yeah. I guess, and answer the question.
Just turn Sanchez, the channel and, you know, don't listen.
Sanchez in Montebello. Hola, ¿qué tal? Adios mío, mi amiga.
Mamacita y el Muki Chris. Muy yes. Buenos nachos. Actually, they're going to be a little oily this morning. We've been talking about the Gulf oil spill all morning, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, have you guys heard about the second oil spill that's, like, right near the Deepwater Horizon?
Hey.
Have you
no.
heard about it?
Is this the Atlantis
no.
one?
The second plume you're talking about?
I don't know if this is actually, if it's called Atlantis, but they say it's been going since at least April 30th. And the reason is it's coming to my attention. There's a brand new YouTube video on it. It's just been filmed by an environmental activist. His name is Hurricane Creek Keeper. Now, here's the name of the video that you need to see. The title is A New Source with a question mark, and then the word flyover. And in this documentary, he's flying over a drilling rig, which is called the Ocean Saratoga. So I think it's a different one than the Atlantis one, okay? But it's owned by Diamond Offshore. This is a petroleum leak that's been going on. They're mixing the toxins, you know, the disbursements with the oil. This thing has been going on since the 30th of April. There is a plume right now in the Gulf of Mexico, 10 miles long, which is headed for the mouth of the Mississippi River. There's been very, very little government documentation on this thing. And again, the only way I found out about it is when somebody sent me a link to this YouTube video. So people need to go check it out. Once again on YouTube, A New Source question mark with the word flyover.
All right. Thank you, Sanchez. Yeah, I mean, that's the disturbing thing, Chris, is, the number of times people have said unprecedented on the air, and the problem is it's not.
It's kind of precedent.
It just has not gotten the, the press that this has gotten, but, the fact remains, drilling is not safe.
Right.
Obviously.
Where is it in Nigeria that river delta has as much oil spilled in it per year as Deepwater Horizon is spilling?
Yep. 46 minutes after the hour, back with all the crunchy audio goodness and latest from the Gulf as we continue on the Stephanie Miller Show. Remember, you heard it on this channel first.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show. Stephanie Miller.
We will get through this crisis. I was down there a month ago, before most of these talking heads were even paying attention to the Gulf. A month ago, I was meeting with fishermen down there, standing in the rain, talking about what a potential crisis this could be. And I don't sit around just talking to experts because this is a college seminar. We talk to these folks because they potentially had the best answers, so I know who's asked to kick.
Yeah!
Carl, we'll talk to Foxy Brown about that in a few minutes.
Drudge is saying Obama's going straight with that comment, who's asked to kick. Like, that's racist.
Oh, now he's being too angry, a black man.
No,
I feel like he's going to break into my house and steal my stereo.
Matt Drudge is nothing but a racist with that comment.
Carl in Chicago, you're on the Stephanie Miller Show. Hi, Carl.
Hi. The whole thing on this is going to boil down to how much is it going to cost BP? That's what their people are feverishly working on. Mm-hmm. And the interesting thing is it's going to...
Once again, I was just going to say, load the liar cannon, Chris. Tony Hayward said his company has paid every claim. In fact, less than half the claims have been paid.
If and you ain't the granddaddy of all liars.
Yeah. They've paid 18,000 out of 37,000 claims.
If Obama... Obama wanted to show genuine concern on this thing, he would do like what we do with foreign countries, like when there's a tsunami or Haiti, he should start an aid fund for these people that are down there, so they don't have to be abused by BP, so they don't have to sign release documents from BP if you accept money that you're not going to sue later on, because a lot of these people, when they're asked to submit tax documents from 08 and 09, a lot of these people do business by cash. It's a cash business. It's difficult for them to do that, so it's going to be a struggle, and it's going to be real hard to put a dollar amount on the damage on the ecosystem, and how much is a brown pelican worth?
Right. Exactly, Carl. You know, somebody was, a guy from down the Gulf was on TV this morning, I think it was, Chris, going, it's not just money. You know, it's not just the the loss of livelihood. I mean, it's their whole life down there.
Yeah.
Thad Allen has asked BP to stop using the phrase "very pleased." We have a very British phrase. They're very pleased with everything so far.
There's nothing pleasing about this situation. Absolutely nothing.
One VP vice president said yesterday, this operation they're doing now, it's going extremely well. We're very pleased. Allen told Candy Crowley, nobody should be pleased as long as there's oil in the water. The live underwater video shows no apparent reduction in the oil spewing into the Gulf. BP, of course, has a long record of being very pleased.
Yeah.
The rest of us are not amused.
Right.
With their failed efforts to stop the leak and contain the spread of oil, which has now led to the closure of a third of the Gulf of Mexico, an area larger than the state of Florida. I mean, that's the disturbing thing that's hard to even... I mean, you see some of it on TV, Chris, but just the size of this... President Obama yesterday.
This will be contained. It may take some time, and it's going to take a whole lot of effort. There's going to be damage done to the Gulf Coast, and there's going to be economic damages that we've got to make sure BP is responsible for and compensates people for.
Haley Barbour, by the way, has continued to downplay the oil gusher, explaining the tar balls washing up on his state's beaches are no big deal, because you can pick them up and throw them in the bag.
Oh, my God.
He, instead of attacking BP for causing the spill, he blamed the media for creating the misperception of crisis, you know, with their pesky cameras and all, Chris, taking the pictures of the things. By daring to call attention to one of the worst environmental disasters in American history, he was on the Fox News on Sunday. He said, well, the truth is, Chris, we have virtually no oil. We've had a few tar balls, but we have tar balls every year as a natural product of the Gulf of Mexico. Oh, it's like popcorn. They make it every year, the Gulf of Mexico.
You can bat them around with a tennis racket.
What's tar balls? It's that season. He literally said tar balls are no big deal. He said the worst thing for us is how our tourist season has been hurt by the misperception of what's going on down here. The Mississippi coast is beautiful. As I tell people, the coast is clear. Come on down. As we've said earlier, Chris, the fish are hardly putting up a fight anymore.
Yeah.
You can just hit it in the head with a tar ball and bing, and put it right in the bag. Barbour went on to suggest that President Obama was destroying himself by not adequately responding to the spill. Yeah, they're having a hard time on this, aren't they, Chris?
Just a little.
Yeah, apparently it's no big deal, but the president's doing a really bad job at the thing that really is no big deal. By not adequately responding to the spill, but he had nothing negative to say about BP. Barbour, this is just a little completely coincidental fun fact, Chris, he received $1.8 million from oil and gas companies for his gubernatorial campaign. He explained when we ask BP for something, they try to do it.
Mm.
Meaning give him money for his campaign. I think that's what he meant. That's the thing they do.
Yes.
Paying the claims? Probably.
No.
Maybe about
that. No, that's too expensive.
Wallace said, the White House says until they figure out what happened, a question that you asked, and how to make sure it doesn't happen again, it would be foolish to let oil companies, including BP, drill new deep water wells. Barbour said, well, I disagree with that. Because the alternative to that is we've shut 33 wells just kind of in the middle of production. Who knows if they'll ever come back? Barbour joins another of other Republicans in calling for more drilling before an investigation is complete. Bobby Jindal demanded drilling resume quickly, along with David Hooker Vitter and John Cornyn. They've all called for an immediate end to the moratorium. Immediate end, Chris. Don't. Go, go, go.
Pump more oil.
Yeah, we need to study Don't Ask, Don't Tell endlessly.
Yeah.
Even though 80% of the American people think it's time to get rid of it. No, that we need to study. This, just go, 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 do. We'll figure it out later. What's happened to the Gulf? It's nothing. It's a little tar ball. It happens every year. Okay. What? Why? See, because that's why he'll only go on Fox News, because someone else would go, are you a moron?
Yeah.
What do you mean you have tar balls every year? Yeah.
He only gets softball questions on Fox.
They occur naturally in the Gulf of Mexico. 58 minutes after the hour. You know what? Foxy Brown is the only one that can figure out. Because this is. It's becoming a blaxploitation film. That's what's happening. The president cannot do anything right.
Okay.
All right, as we continue on the Stephanie Miller Show.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's the Stephanie Miller Show.
It is the Stephanie Miller Show. Welcome to it. 6 minutes after the hour, 1-800-STEP-12, the phone number, stephaniemiller.com. You can email us all there. Executive producer Chris LaVoy, voice deity Jim Ward, or me, Stephanie Miller. Don't forget, Mama, we'll be doing election coverage with Larry King tonight, 9 p.m. Eastern and midnight Eastern.
That's right.
How about that?
Yes. And you would already know that if you were signed up on Stephanie Miller's the Stephanie Miller Show Facebook page or your Twitter account at SM Show.
Yes, would I now? Well, I'd be ahead of the curve then, wouldn't I?
I wasn't talking
all
to
right.
you, I was talking to the audience.
Oh, pardon me.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Do you have to have an iPad thing type deal?
No.
Oh.
Like I would know what that is.
Obviously
I didn't
not.
Even know how to operate my portable CD player yesterday, Jim.
Did you hear that, Jim?
Yeah, I heard that.
Oh,
boy.
DVD,
boy.
Actually.
All right. Kids, we are joined by acting royalty, really.
Yes.
You may remember Pam Grier as Foxy Brown. Or
I'm
more recent.
Cherry, I'm your bail bondsman.
Or Jackie Brown.
Yes. Or more recently, Kit Porter on the L Word. We are joined by Pam Grier. Good morning, Pam.
Good morning, Stephanie.
Do you remember you did? I made you come do some ridiculous skit with me on my late night TV show. Do you remember that?
How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
So great to reconnect with you.
Absolutely. What a great book. I mean, you just have one of those amazing stories. I don't even know where to start with you. But let's talk about what they call them blaxploitation films, right?
Okay. Quite a few films done by black male leads before I had done Coffee, Foxy Brown, and Sheba. I had a 3-picture deal from the success of Black Mama, White Mama with Roger Corman. And there were male leads who had been very successful, such as Richard Roundtree, Isaac Hayes, quite a few, Fred Williams and Jim Brown. But they weren't called blaxploitation. They were just action films. As we were going to see Kurosawa, the Seven Samurai, which became Magnificent Seven, or a lot of the martial
right.
arts films, which had more decapitation and gore and women being abused and kimonos flying off of them, but they weren't called Asian exploitation. They were Asian. They were just basically action films. So, but when a black woman stepped into a genre that was male-dominated, and now I'm posturing as a man and telling jokes about male anatomy as men used to tell jokes about female anatomy, and now I'm a nurturer, and I'm uncovering all the crime in the community, and I'm beautiful and sexy and empowered. Now it's an issue? Is it a gender issue?
Right.
This was brought to me by quite a few of the students who, you know, the power of cinema in our academia. They talk about, well, wait a minute. Did I threaten the male population when now I'm taking a female lead and Tamara Dobson and we're stepping into the men's room now?
Mm-hmm.
Now it's blaxploitation. Is it because it is a moniker for advertising, for a demographic to show what if the exhibitors are showing a film, this is a description? And it shouldn't be
right.
negative. And
Pam, you must have an interesting take on how far we've come and maybe not come. I mean, we have the first black president, of course, and we were just talking this morning about, you know, the oil spill. People were like, he's not mad enough. And then yesterday when he expressed anger, you know, Matt Drudge is already saying, oh, he went street.
Well, you know, know, everyone has a different perspective of anything that goes on, whether it's politics, religion, or pop culture. For example, on my journey, we are embracing, understanding Islam more than we've ever done before. Now, when I started dating Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, and it's in my memoir, he had embraced it.
Right.
This last year at UCLA, and then he had been examining it for at least, I would say, 3 years. He gave me 4 months. And as I'm reading about Islam and the Quran, it's a very monolithic community, but there's moderates, conservatives, fundamentalists, and radicals. But he didn't have a plan for us as a couple. So I didn't reject his religion or him. I hadn't enough time to embrace it. And some people would say, from an Eastern standpoint, you know, a woman can't get an education. She's, you know, restricted in community, and that's the Eastern perception. Now, for Western, we feel it's unfair to women. However, when I'm thinking of having a relationship with him, he tells me he's going to marry someone that afternoon if I don't commit. So
wow.
I expected that. It wasn't negative that I rejected him. I didn't reject him. He just didn't give me enough time. But from Eastern, they think, you know, women not getting education is traditional. It's a lot of tradition. To us, it's unfair. Now, if you look at the politics of today, we have a president that has to investigate every legal avenue before he just makes a decision.
Mm-hmm. What?
We have enough community. They said there's 60% of our country that doesn't have a college education and doesn't really understand the level of legalities and politics. He just can't make declarations without examining the
right
ramifications.
Pam, you brought up, I mean, have you had the string of Richard Pryor you dated, Freddie Prinze? You know, the thing in common that strikes me is it's as if they thought you were Foxy Brown and could save them from anything. Freddie Prinze, you know, battled drugs, right, along with Richard Pryor, who thought that you could save him.
Yeah, well, you know, well, here you go. If with Richard, he had been doing drugs when I met him on Grace Lightning, but he wanted to stop. And he was thinking of, you know, will I be funny if I'm sober? And I made him laugh when I put his horse in the backseat of my Jaguar to take to the vet in Reseda. And we drove down the freeway with the horse's head and it was sticking out the back of my car. I was going to, you know, save a life. And then with Freddie, he was a novice. He wasn't into drugs. He was just entering the entertainment business. And he was very successful, and he got wound up in it. But I had already left him because I felt I would be swallowed up alive in his world, and I just needed my own identity because I was a child of the women's movement, which led me to believe that I wouldn't be able to marry Kareem. I wouldn't be able to stay with Freddie. I wouldn't be able to stay with Richard. I would walk away from men that I love because I love Pam, and I loved her independence and being a part of the women's movement.
Mm-hmm. I was reading in your book in the New York Times article today that you still fantasize about your dream wedding, though.
I do. I do hope that I can have that wedding with the dress and the Vera Wang white dress and the reception and family members doing the electric slide. I really do. I don't know if it'll happen, but, you know, whether it does or doesn't, but I would love to have the wedding. It's probably I guess it's tradition and basically in my family. But
right.
I do,
Pam,
it's okay if I don't.
I want to get your take on something else in politics. I don't know if you've seen this controversy with Rand Paul, this Republican candidate who basically said he doesn't think, you know, restaurants should be forced, you know, to serve blacks. I mean, and you're someone that you talk about in your book went through segregation. You went through the humiliation. You weren't allowed to try on a pair of shoes in department stores because of the racism, correct?
It was Jim Crow. But see, people don't understand when everyone is putting their taxes into the bowl, that the firemen, what you pay taxes for, to come to stop that restaurant from burning down, because
right,
even though they wouldn't allow blacks or Asians to go into that restaurant, the taxes from those people are paying for those firemen to come and save that restaurant. It's a community. So
yeah.
I don't know if that is absolutely, in theory, possible. Maybe in their own spirit, which is very secular, but as far as we are a community, we're on a global vibrational journey. What you and I are talking right now on the radio, you know, there's a woman who is an actor and a woman who is a journalist are talking on radio right now on the other side of the world, maybe in another language, but we're discussing the same issues of family and child and politics and what's going on in the world. And we, for us to say that the restaurant that is public domain, should be able to decide who can enter its restaurant. Where there's still country clubs that Tiger Woods can't join.
Yep.
Come into.
Referring to me as a journalist, by the way, is very, very generous of you. But let's talk about, you know, the book is Foxy, My Life in Three Acts. And I have to say, Pam, I mean, what an, you know, not just have you survived racism, but rape. I mean, you know, you had a cervical cancer diagnosis. I mean, how have you done it? I mean, you're obviously a story of just survival and triumph.
Well, you know, I had those events. Those were very tragic and traumatic, and not everyone recovers well. And there are times where I still stutter from some of the trauma that I suffered as a child. And it depends on how we recover. Today, I keep seeing, you know, that the abuse in family and society being passed on from generation to generation, when there's so much more of psychology and counseling and sociology and the people that can provide the comprehension to your family dysfunction today than there was when I was growing up. And I just thought I'd bring light to it that, you know, I hate to see it, families just continue to pass this dysfunction on. And you don't recover well. Some do, some don't, some repress it. And it is not the most pleasant. And it can hold people back. I've had women stand up and testify that they had encountered similar abuses in their lives, and that they didn't feel so alone when I talked about what I had been through, and that there are groups and counseling, community counseling, that can help and provide that lifeline that keeps us going, that pulls us out of despair. I was lucky to have it. Not everyone gets it. So I thought I would share that with others. You know,
Pam, you obviously, you know, again, story of triumph. Did you already shoot a film recently with Tom Hanks and Julia Roberts, did I hear?
Yes, I just finished it on Thursday, called Larry Crown, and I played Julia Roberts' best friend. And it's a very timely film. It's about a man played by Tom Hanks who loses his job, and he goes back to college to get his business degree so he can start over. He lost his house, his family, everything, and he meets Julia, and then he falls in love. Where Julia and I are teachers, professors at a city college. And it's a very timely film, and it'll resonate with what's happening today.
Good for you. The book is Foxy, My Life in Three Acts. You know, what can I say? A new movie, a new book, and I'm going to dance the electric slide at your wedding in your white Vera Wang dress.
You're going to be invited.
Yes, I am. Pam Greer, so great to talk to you again. Thank you so much.
Well, good luck on your show.
Thank you. All right, Pam Greer, the book is Foxy, My Life in Three Acts. Thank you so much.
Yay.
It's Foxy Brown. I did. I made her do a ridiculous skit on my disastrous late night show.
It sounded like she wanted to forget that.
Yeah.
Yes.
She went right to...
She had the misfortune of being really good friends with one of my executive producers on the late night show, who forced her into doing some silly blaxploitation comedy skit.
Clearly
thing with
she
me.
She locked it out of her mind.
Yeah.
She doesn't write about that as being one of the things she survived.
No.
Anyway, fascinating stuff.
Wow.
You get her affair with Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. It's fascinating stuff, Jim. It's back when we didn't mind Islam when it came with a really good hook shot. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
All right. We have
still, Stephanie, we still don't mind Islam. It's the
of
rest.
Course not.
Okay.
I'm talking about the right wing, for
oh,
God's
got
sakes.
You. Okay. Of course. Yes.
What, have you not been on the show for several years?
I have, but I just didn't want, you know, Newsbusters.
What am I, Helen Thomas suddenly?
I didn't want Newsbusters to take that out of context.
Oh, by the way, Jim, there's another, my moron alert system has gone off again. My test of the moron alert system, I will tell you.
What? The test of the moron alert system.
Oh, those right-wingers got me again. I'll tell you about that as
have
we continue.
Have you been featured in Newsbusters?
No, it's something else.
Oh.
Okay. Yeah, we'll get to that as we continue. 19, and we have Eric Idle from Monty Python coming up. Hello.
Yep.
What a show. 19 minutes after the hour, it's the Stephanie Miller Show.
Oh, God. That feels weird and good all at once.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show.
Stephanie Miller.
Makes me that much stronger. Makes me work a little bit harder. Makes me that much wiser. Thanks for making me wiser.
It is the Stephanie Miller Show. 24 minutes after the hour. 1-800-STEP-1-2, the phone number, toll free from anywhere. Wow, the right-wing moron alert is on a delay, Chris. It's on several months delay, apparently. Julie writes, Mama's moron alert still going off. Dear Steph, believe it or not, your long-ago moron alert. See, this is what I do. I make a joke, Chris.
Yes.
Somewhere like, say, Larry King. And then Newsbusters and all the other right-wing moron organizations pick it up as if it was I meant it.
Right.
And
okay.
To talk about how hateful and insidious.
What did you do now?
Left-wingers are. This is so long ago, I don't even remember what the joke was about, but it clearly was a joke. Maybe you'll remember. Your long-ago moron alert test system statement on TV that Rush Limbaugh should be executed is still going off. Here is a concerned young religious fellow named Peter Heck. That has a bone to pick with Reverend Jim Wallace making Christianity into a sappy I care about others and the planet thing, and he drags your left-wing radio fart joke show into it. Yeah, here he is. I was busted for this. Apparently, recently on the left-wing talk radio program, The Stephanie Miller Show, Wallace condemned the utterly partisan political dialogue. Mm-hmm. That's why I like shows like yours, Wallace commented to Miller. But wait, Stephanie Miller is the same woman who went on Larry King and called for the execution of Rush Limbaugh. She also recently made the proclamation that God is a Democrat.
God is a Democrat.
Chris, do you remember what clearly, some of the morons on the right actually, did they really think that I really thought Rush Limbaugh was going to be executed? I believe it was a joke about something. I don't remember.
Yes.
Jim, help me out here. Now I'm going to have to Google myself and remember what the joke was about.
I don't remember.
Don't make me Google myself. It's not pretty.
I don't listen to this show.
Apparently they do.
I'm tempted to say something else on Larry King tonight that will set off the right-wing moron alert system.
Well, then you get another a sock letter.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, how about this one? Can you see this through the Skype, Chris? You know it's mad when it's big letters.
Big, yeah.
Yes.
Times Chris New Roman
writes,
letters.
Drill, baby, drill. Now, if you want to put me in jail, I live in Monticello, Indiana. Come and get me, you bitch, and tell Grayson to kiss my ass. Thank you.
You know,
I was supposed to get together. Congressman Grayson was in New York this weekend, but I was not. We were going to get together, and I could have. I wouldn't have told him that because
Yeah.
I'm just saying theoretically I could have.
Right. So they're still saying drill, baby, drill. They really think
are.
This is a great thing.
And apparently he thinks I have the power to put him in jail for that if only I could find where he lives in Monticello.
Whatever. Yeah.
Okay.
Now, I don't think he'd be saying that if drilling was going on in his backyard and there was a major
spill. Perhaps I could have Congressman Grayson put him in jail. I hope you took that down, Newsbusters. Okay, Jeff in Orange County, here on the Stephanie Miller Show. Welcome.
Yeah, actually, drill, baby, drill, I guess that's the mantra if you're in Indiana and your shoreline's being destroyed. I think that's where your caller was from. But two quick points is that I'd like to know who these cronies are that are able to intimidate American citizens and photographers on the coastline. It reminds me of the Hessians during the Revolutionary War doing the bidding of the English. How is anybody allowed to intimidate anybody from the public beaches so they can't take pictures of oil-laden pelicans and so on? I understand that this is some factions of law enforcement are involved with this, plus private contractors. How is this possible? I'd like to, next time Maxine Waters is on, I'd like her to introduce a bill that would make that illegal, and anybody who practices that gets thrown in jail for a period of time.
I hear you. I mean, and that's obviously just one other layer of cover-up on BP's part. The president yesterday.
We are not going to get this problem completely solved until we actually have the relief well completed, and that is going to take a couple more months.
The president, one more time, on the ecosystem in the Gulf.
This is a resilient ecosystem. These are resilient people down on the Gulf Coast.
It's actually kind of fragile.
Yeah, it really is.
And it's never taken a blow like this. I mean, that's the problem.
We don't know how resilient it's going to be against
this
onslaught.
And we also don't know how much oil is down there because of all the dispersants. They're trying to hide it.
Yeah, and now, of course, the you know the worserer news of today is that it's broken into hundreds, maybe thousands of bright, like, patches. So we don't even know how many or how long this is going to take. 29 minutes after the hour, we'll come back with comedy legend Monty Python's Eric Idle next on The Stephanie Miller Show.
Stephanie Miller.
She was only pretending to be drunk.
Is rum alcoholic?
It is the Stephanie Miller Show. 34 minutes after the hour. Oh, this little fart joke radio show. You know, we have comedy royalty on, and all I have is this cheap butter commercial music, for God's sakes. The best I can do.
Always look on the bright side of life.
That's better. Eric Idle from Monty Python. Good morning, Eric.
Good morning.
We just do not have people of your caliber on the show, and we're a little nervous, but...
Thank you so much. I'm on the road. I'm in L.A.
Well, yeah, I know. And I'm coming back to L.A. in a couple of weeks, but I, you know, Jim Ward, my co-host here, is almost a Monty Python savant. He will frequently throw in... Monty Python lines.
I'll throw in a random Monty Python.
Is he an idiot savant or just a fool?
No. It's like being a brilliant savant. So, Life of Brian, obviously such a classic. I can't even think how you can make it better, and now I'm thinking, oh, I know, a musical treatment. So you
We thought of the musical treatment, and then we thought, well, let's go even grander. Let's go into the symphony concert and take a symphony orchestra and a whole choir and a chorale of 160 people and make it so grand it looks really silly thinking about this man, Brian. And that's sort of what we've done. We just made it bigger and most, you know, spectacular.
And it's called Not the Messiah, He's a Very Naughty Boy.
Yes, it is called that, which is a line from the original movie. And, you know, Mandy, who isn't played by a woman in our production, a great mezzo voice, sings that role and talks that role. It's sort of like the Ring cycle, and it's the Bling cycle. it's not quite Wagner.
But, you know, Eric, I got to ask you about the process from the beginning. I mean, how do you guys, you know, I know you get this all the time, but how much was ad-libbed? How did you even come up with the idea? I mean,
are you talking about Not the Messiah?
Well, I'm talking about, let's start with just Life of Brian in the first place.
Well, that was about 3 years in the writing. You know, we started off with an idea and sort of looked around for what it would encompass and what it would be, you know, what we're trying to make fun of. And it's a long, serious process. I mean, the screenwriting process, it went on, as I say, for 3 years.
And involved a lot of conjugating in Latin.
Yes. Exactly. People would bring in sketches and they'd fit in or not fit in, or, you know, we'd meld them and try and make them into one story. Because the hardest thing for six writers to do is to make one story and have real characters. It's the thing we were least good at. Because we could go extreme and bring in things from all over the dial, but to try and focus down and hone down on a character and what the character should be, when you've got five or six different impressions of who that should be, I think that's much harder. So it was easier for me. Sorry.
Well, you know, Jim Ward, my co-host here, is a master impressionist and actor, and but you know, he has to, at least we have Google now, so he can, like, if he needs Latin phrases. But this
Absolutely.
Was back when
Google
we didn't have that.
Implies has, action.
You see, Google has saved us in the post-Alzheimer's generation. You don't need a memory now, you just need an iPhone or something.
There's an app for that, exactly.
I know.
Well, you know, being a happy, clappy liberal myself, of course, one of my personal favorites is The Bright Side, your song, The Bright Side of Life.
Right.
What was the inspiration for that?
Well, we were writing The Life of Brian, and everybody was going to be crucified. I mean, the whole company, we're all being headed for death, and we're going, how on earth are we going to end this? And he said, I know, we should end with a song.
And said, of course.
Well, of course you end with a song. And then I said, it should be really cheery. It should be really insanely cheery-uppy, like a Disney whistling song. So I went home and wrote it and brought it back the next day.
We need it more than ever these days, in the middle of the oil spill and the economy and God knows what else. We should just be playing that on a loop.
It's always good advice. Always look on the bright side. You know, it's been for the last 10 years amongst the top 10 most requested songs at funerals.
At least
gives me a career to look forward to. But you know, it's nice that I love that. I mean, it's touching and it's moving and it addresses real issues. So people feel better when they sing it. And you know, it ends this performance, obviously, with all of the whole Royal, you know, Albert Hall singing Always Look on the Bright Side.
Now, you know, we were talking about how technology has changed. So not only is this The Life of Brian getting a musical treatment, but it's on Blu-ray, high def, and DVD, right?
And it looks great. I mean, it looks really great. It's the most impressive hall you could ever imagine, the Albert Hall. And so will you fill it with 5,000 or 6,000 people all waving little candles and singing You're the One.
Wow.
It's really it's quite a show.
Wow.
It's historic. It's a one-night-only live show, correct? So tell people...
Exactly. And what are the odds on us ever getting together and doing anything again? You know, they're not great. So I was very determined that to get as many as I could and lure them into the public just to say thank you. And the public loved them. You know, was happy. They were happy to see them. And Michael Palin came on in full drag, which is really exciting. And he said his name was Betty Palin, Mrs. Betty Palin, and he was the mother of a little-known governor of Alaska. So I think we've solved that now. You know, her parentage now is put to rest. She was officially birthed by a lumberjack.
Oh, the lumberjack song.
I'm a lumberjack and I'm okay.
Now you're talking one of my favorites.
We do this as an encore. Michael sings this as an encore.
And oh, great.
It's very touching for me to watch that happen. I love it.
I believe we have it. We play it now and again when there's been some, a little spasm of right-wing machismo.
I'm a lumberjack and I'm okay.
You know, when someone's trying to disprove their gayness or something.
Right.
I love my wife and I'm a lumberjack.
I think what we did was we made it okay for lumberjacks to come out.
That's right. Come on.
I mean, proud of us for that.
But is that where that came from? Because, you know, you certainly do. I mean, I'm sure you follow politics here in America, the way this happens. I mean, the sort of even now with Don't Ask, Don't Tell, just sort of the gay bashing and the machismo. I mean, is that where the genesis of I'm a Lumberjack was?
Well, I think that the lumberjacks were, for English boys anyway, the most butch image you could get. Even more butch than Scottish people, because there were Scottish people who'd gone to Canada and cut down trees. So I think that you know, he's working with opposites. The image of the very butch lumberjack and the idea that he dresses up in women's clothing and goes out for tea.
Yes.
It's a contrast. It's like you're pulling in contrast again, which is where a lot of comedy lies.
Yep.
And, yeah.
I'm glad the gay bashing has certainly gone a lot. It's not much less than it ever used to be. I mean, it's getting okay. People can even conceive now of people wanting to marry because they love each other.
Right.
Which is exciting. Well, so it is progress. It's progress.
I always thought, you know, the men of Monty Python were the ones secure in their masculinity because you would put on a dress at the drop of a hat, and that takes a real man.
Well, yes, and also I think we were proud because we were the first ugly drag. You know?
Yeah.
we weren't trying to look more beautiful.
I feel like that is not a pretty woman. I mean, Dustin Hoffman looks gorgeous compared to...
That's slightly not a gay thing. That's yes, I am wearing... And we would go into pubs afterwards. We'd be filming in all these little costumes with breasts and all these awful skirts and handbags. And we'd go racing into the pub saying, pint of lager, please. I'll have a beer. What do you have? And they would fall over. They couldn't believe all these little old ladies rushing in ordering beer.
The Life of Brian gets the musical treatment and not the Messiah. He's a very naughty boy. It is on Blu-ray, high def, and DVD June 8th. Chris, is there a link up at stephaniemiller.com?
There certainly is.
Well, terrific. Well, we will never have this opportunity again, and it has been delightful. Eric Idle, comedy legend from Monty Python. Thank you so much, Eric.
Thank you, Stephanie. Nice to talk to you.
You too. There he goes.
Yay.
Well, that's it.
I'm voting
Jim, this
straight.
Has been a week for me. I don't know if you heard my story, but Ed Asner told me yesterday that I make him squeaky in his shorts.
Wow.
So, you know.
I'm not sure that's a compliment.
As sad as my life is.
You know what? I think it's a compliment to Ed Asner.
He meant it in a nice way. I could tell.
Yes, in his gruff, lovable way.
I'll take what I can get in
you
my sad little life.
You make me squeaky in my shorts.
He said it exactly like
exactly
that.
Exactly like that. Yeah. He said it in that I hate a spunk kind of voice.
Yeah.
David in San Francisco. Hi, Dave.
Hey, morning all. You know, I was hoping to find out who Billy Bremner was. That was my my great question from all of that. Hey, you know, when
who's,
I called...
Who's...
Oh, well,
who
Billy
are we talking about?
Well, Billy Bremner? You don't know Billy Bremner?
No.
Early Monty Python.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Okay. I don't speak as fluent Monty Pythonese as Jim does.
I,
and he doesn't even know
I
what you're talking about, but go ahead.
Hey, a couple of different things. I was interested in the long-term effects of the Gulf spill. For example, if you think of all of those chemicals coming off the water, I saw Rachel Maddow a few days ago. She was way out into the Gulf, and she said it smelled like a horrible gas station, even in the open air.
Yep.
So if you can imagine all of those distillates, petroleum distillates turning into something equivalent of acid rain, hundreds of miles into the coastline, maybe Nashville, you know, up into Kentucky or something like that, they may have problems with their paint jobs. They may have accelerated asthma rates. They may have the crops get burned by acid rain.
Yep.
It may be horrible.
Mm-hmm.
And as you, the last time I called, actually, I mentioned that I was going to meet with the son of the devil down in Guantanamo, and he didn't show up. But I did meet with his scheduling secretary, and he gave me a quick punch in the mouth. And for a little while, I was going to talk with a whistle, but it does look like the people like that work down in Guantanamo are going to have to be suffering the effects of some of this acid rain as well. So,
all right.
Wow.
Wowee, Kazawi. I you know, we haven't whipped out our have a point in quite some time, but that started.
By the way, you know, when you're telling these little stories, here's a good idea: have a point. It makes it so much more interesting for the listener.
All right, you know, if you here's start with a Monty Python reference that is too obscure for Jim to get, then
yeah,
you're on your own.
You already lost the battle.
You're on your own. 45 minutes.
I actually missed an episode. Wow. That's, amazing.
45
and
minutes
not that
after
many,
the hour.
Not that many episodes were produced either.
That's true.
Yeah.
All right. 45 minutes after the hour. I'm going to put Oil Spill Stuff, Celebrity Stack, and Right Wing World on a salad shooter and see which one pops out when we return. On the
That's what he just did.
On the Stephanie Miller Show.
That's the craziest thing I've ever heard.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show.
Stephanie Miller. How bizarre. How bizarre. How bizarre.
It is Stephanie Miller Show. Welcome to it. 50 minutes after the hour. 1-800-STEPH-12, the phone number. Toll free from anywhere. Our Tuesday pal, Charlie Pierce, coming up next hour.
Yes.
Look at him getting bumped around by
Yeah, we had to bump him because we got Eric Idle on at that time. That was the only time he was available. So.
Listen, good friends understand when you drop them at a moment's notice for a bigger name. That's how it goes. We love you, Charlie.
We're
going to come crawling back when we are Monty Pythonless next week.
And plus it gives listeners who only listen in the third hour a chance to hear the brilliance of Charlie Pierce.
That's right.
Charlie Pierce is hilarious.
Yep.
All right. Oops, let's see what came out of the salad shooter. Oh, it's Celebrity Stack. Whee! Is the iPhone entertainment? I think so.
Yes.
The new iPhone is out.
No, it's not out. It comes out,
well,
I think,
coming.
They announced it yesterday.
Comes out June 24th.
The 24th, yes. And,
yes.
I want one.
You saying it's gay?
It will have a higher resolution screen, a longer battery.
I thought it was so rugged.
a longer battery life, and a thinner design iPhone 4.
Mm-hmm.
Which will cost $199 or $299 in the U.S. with a two-year AT&T contract. Hmm. Is the reception still a little spotty with that particular provider in the L.A. area?
In the major cities, it can be rife with drop calls, yes. But that's because everybody in the major cities has an iPhone.
And you know what I'm going to miss most here in New York is my cable company, Slime Porner.
But you have Slime Porner here in Los Angeles as well.
I can't escape them. One of my TVs is just not working now. It just says, oh, call whatever for this channel. It's just a basic channel. But you know what that means. That it will take years and cost hundreds of millions of lives to get someone on the phone. And then if you have to wait because they have to come and actually check your box, trust me
your
about this.
Your call is very important to us, but not so important that we'll actually talk to you in person.
Yeah.
My friend Mike in Palm Springs has that exact same problem. You know, they're basic channels, but call this to get...
Call this number to see why this box is being finicky.
Yeah.
So to speak. All right. So, a lot of people covered the Elton John singing at the Drug Addled Gasbags fourth wedding for a cool $1 million. Chris, did you get a satisfactory response? I didn't really on why Elton John felt he needed the money.
I suppose he's broke again.
There are rumors that those two are actually friends. Megyn Kelly, who's an anchor for Fox News, was at the wedding, and she said that the relationship was really cordial. In fact, it was almost friendly. So they may be friends in real life. Who can say? You know, and Rush may just be putting on an act for his radio show, which is common in right-wing radio.
Yeah, it's not funny to gay people, though, is it?
No, it's not. It's absolutely not funny.
But apparently Rush does support animal rights causes because that's the only reason Chrissy
Hines... Not gay animals.
No.
But that's the only reason that Chrissy Hines letting him use the song.
Right.
You know, went back
Right. Hey, what a guest list. Wouldn't you have liked to have been there, Jim, Carl Rove, Fred Thompson, who had to take a nap halfway through the ceremony, I'm sure.
I'm pretty tired. Think I'll go home now.
Can I get a round of applause? Remember that? He had to ask for his own. Oh, boy.
Okay. Sean Hannity, James Carville and his harpy wife, Mary Madeline. Rudy Giuliani. And, of course, Clarence Thomas, who I frequently enjoy adult beverages with. I'm on the veranda of my Palm Beach state, my friends. Okay.
Did he bring his own Coke can?
You know, I think actually he officiated. Maybe that's bad luck, so he didn't have him officiate at this one. Oh. One of his previous weddings, Clarence Thomas officiated that. Yes. All right. I bet you he never, ever ordered a Coke ever again, don't you think?
At least not in a can.
Just for the giggles.
Maybe from the fountain.
Wow. This, the Gary Coleman thing, oh boy. This just gets... So his parents believe his death may have been caused by foul play. His estranged parents want to find out whether blunt force trauma was responsible for his passing on May 28th from a brain hemorrhage. He fell into a coma after his ex-wife, who he was dating again and believed to be on the verge of remarrying, after he experienced a fall at his home. Police do not believe his death was suspicious, and Shannon made the decision to turn off the life support machine after doctors said he would not recover. But she, of course, was not married to him, which didn't know that.
Kind of weird.
The whole story's kind of sad, weird. By the way, I understand I didn't hear it. Chris, did you the 911 call? But she's not quite the paramedic, is she?
No, I didn't hear it.
All right. By the way, Sandra Bullock.
I kind of don't want to hear it. Don't want to hear it.
I know. All right. For Sandra Bullock, who has made her first appearance after the, the unpleasantness. D-listed writing, after months of playing Mary J. Blige is not going to cry on repeat while cutting Vanilla Gorilla's face out of pictures and replacing it with Keanu Reeves. Sandra Bullock came out to play last night at Spike TV's Guy's Choice Award. She won the Troops Choice Award for Entertainer of the Year. And
congratulations.
She was funny, as always. She said, let's be honest just for a moment. We're all going to be honest. Did I win this for being Entertainer of the Year? Or did I win this because of the spectacular IED explosion that became my personal life?
That's funny.
She said, it's okay because I would do it over again if it was to entertain our troops, and our extraordinary troops deserve something much more than some actress in a tight dress talking about herself. And then at the MTV, Jim, this for you. Then she threw in a little something for the boys at the MTV Movie Awards. She slapped a tongue kiss on, what's her name, Scarlett Johansson.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Damn.
Something else for the boys there. Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm.
And probably some of the girls, too.
Yeah, yeah.
Well.
Oh, by the way, Miley Cyrus was the superficial says Miley Cyrus still doing slutty stuff. She was performing in London, kissing a girl in less than 24 hours after taking to her blog to saying she didn't kiss one the first time. There are these things called cameras, Miley, that record moments in time exactly as they happen. I know that sounds like devil magic, but you're gonna have to roll with me on this one. The girl on girl action is on camera, Miley.
Uh huh. She should take her own advice to the American Idol contestant.
Just be yourself.
That was her advice to everybody. And that was probably everyone's worst night.
All right. You know, many, many reasons I'm looking forward to moving back to Los Angeles. And one, of course, is the traffic.
Yeah.
Yes, but you are not out during any kind of rush hour whatsoever.
Exactly. It's not like I have a life of any kind. This one in Darien, Connecticut. Police say a naked man yelling he was Jesus was the catalyst for a five-vehicle accident on Interstate 95 North that injured three people with slow traffic. That wouldn't slow anything down in L.A. You're like, oh, it's another naked guy that thinks he's Jesus. Just go! This is the 405. It's rush hour. Go.
Well, here it'd be a naked guy who thinks he's Jesus, which may in fact be the case.
I love at the end of the story, it says the naked man's name was not released. I think he told you who he is. He's Jesus.
Jesus.
His name wasn't released.
Brian.
He just said it.
Do we have a Brian?
Yes. The life of Brian.
All right. 58 minutes after the hour, Right Wing World, Charlie Pierce, and much more as we continue on the Stephanie Miller Show.
Gentlemen, it's the Stephanie Miller Show.
Oh, pardon me, I was starting to take my nap now since I'll be doing election coverage with Larry King at 9 p.m. Eastern and midnight. All right. I may not have the snap, crackle, and pop on the later edition of election primary coverage tonight.
Why don't they just repeat what they do at 9 at
because
midnight?
Because different things happen.
All right.
I'm voting the straight Judean People's Front ticket.
That's a party?
It's a Life of Brian reference.
Oh, I see. Okay.
We had Eric Idle on today. If you missed that interview, it'll be up at StephanieMiller.com after the show. StephanieMiller.com. Check it out. You can email us all there. Executive producer Chris LaVoy, voice deity Jim Ward, or me, Stephanie Miller. Oh, heavens, like, oh, it's another unsolicited testimonial to the Stephanie Miller Show and the sponsors who support the Stephanie Miller Show. Julie in Seattle writes, dear Steph, where do lawyers who could draft their own wills but are too busy reporting beaver stack to bother go get a new will done? Why? They go to StephanieMiller.com and click on LegalZoom, of course.
How about that?
Where you can spend 15 minutes and get your legal must-haves done and delivered for a teensy-tiny fraction of what a lawyer would charge for the same documents. P.S. I just found out you can even use LegalZoom to set up a guardianship and a trust for one's care of one's giant dogs and treacherous cats. Fabulous. David writes, Steph, we were mentioning how many people brought a baby to the bar to see me in Asheville, North Carolina.
You! Mm-hmm. You have a baby! In a bar!
Mm. David writes, Steph, it makes perfect sense to bring a baby to the bar since that's where so many of them begin. That's true.
Okay, well, sure.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. You know, I think I mentioned that one of the reasons it's time for me to escape New York is the vermin have arrived. I have a... landlady says mice. The droppings look a little large to me. Just saying. I hear some footsteps at night. I'm just saying. I think Ben has arrived. It's time for Mama to skedaddle on back to L.A. And Max had a giant bout of diarrhea last night.
Oh, boy.
Which took, that was like circus cleanup this morning before work. Because I don't have a dog door, you see.
Right.
Wait a minute, the landlady won't let me. Oh, by the way, we're good friends now, Gail and Mel and I, my landlords, and they're going to come visit me and stay with me in L.A., which I can't wait for because I'm not going to let them do anything. And I'll be like, it's my house.
Make them come in through the dog door.
There you go. All right. Oh, this happened to me. By the way, speaking of critters, this something like this happened to me. Was Patty Everett scared when she saw the snake coming out of the air conditioning vent in her Buick SUV? She said, well, somebody crapped in my pants.
Oh, God. Oh, I like that one.
That happened to me once, but it was, you know what, those things we have in L.A.? It was an iguana. I was on my dashboard. And I was thinking it was outside, and I realized it was on, and that's exactly what I did. I just left the car, and I ran screaming down the street.
It was stuck to the inside of your windshield?
No, it was skittering across the dashboard.
Okay. Do you know how big iguanas are?
It wasn't an iguana. It was just a little lizard. It was a lizard.
Lizard things.
An iguana is the size of your head.
An iguana is the size of a large cat.
Yeah, you would run from that.
Yes. She had a baby in the car. She said now she was out on the street. Other drivers were watching her, wondering what the problem is. I didn't realize I lost a shoe. I'm running around with the baby, one shoe, panicky. People are looking, wondering what's going on. As I recall, I had to go get a guy. I was running down the street like a crazy woman. I'm like, there's a lizard in my car. And he came and got it out.
I'm sure you said it was an iguana. And so that's why he ran. But then he saw
Godzilla's in my car.
But then he saw there was a lizard and said, oh, you puss.
I was on the way to do this show. I'm like, I have a very important fart joke. Radio show. I've got to go.
How did the lizard get in your car?
Through the vents, probably.
Through the vents?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know. Wow. I don't know. Speaking of critter trouble, I don't know why. I just need to read the headline. I'm guessing this is not something Jim Ward would sign up for. 72-year-old Yorkshireman describes what it's like to tie your pants off at the ankle, insert a couple of angry ferrets into your trousers, and then cinch your belt and leave them there. What? Oh, for 5 hours while completely sober.
Why would one do that?
We've nought to do up here in Yorkshire, so that's entertainment.
Yes, that's exactly what it is. It's called ferret legging. It's in his new book, Rick Riley writes at length about ferret legging.
That's
a bloody
thing?
Endurance competition where the athlete stuffs a ferret down his pants.
An athlete?
Uh-huh. The world record used to stand at 40 painful seconds of keeping them down, as they say, in ferret legging circles.
There were circles. Wow.
A few years later, the dreaded one-minute mark was finally surpassed. The current record now stands at an awesome 5 hours and 26 minutes, a mark reached last year by a gaudily tattooed 72-year-old little Yorkshireman who kept two ferrets down his pants for 5.5 hours.
Yeah, paralyzed from the waist down.
Yes, I understand. Pardon me?
Paralyzed from the waist down so he couldn't feel a thing.
Yeah. Oh, boy. All right. Let's, speaking of terrifying, let's dive into the right-wing world, see what's doing, shall we, kids? Here we go. Oh. Bill Kristol. Uh-huh. Must I say it?
Sure.
Always wrong about everything ever. Okay. So this is on the primaries, what's going to happen today, and how very, very influential Caribou Barbie is.
Sarah Palin will turn out to have been sort of a precursor of something, which is before that, on the Republican side, most of the women who got elected were moderates, many of them from the Northeast, typically pro-choice. Now you have a lot of Sarah Palin-type candidates who look like they're going to do well tomorrow, and I think do well this year.
I think she's going to be more of a dispersant than a precursor.
Yeah, how's that Nikki Haley thing going? Oh, dear.
You know, okay, Tea Partiers may win today. Just because, you know, it's a primary and, you know, when people...
Right, but that would be perfect, and then they lose in the general.
Exactly. That's what I was going to say.
Right.
Yeah, Bill Press was saying that this weekend, that we're going to take Kentucky because Rand Paul
is... the Rand Pauls.
Absolutely.
Well, that's a very interesting philosophical question, which I'm not going to answer.
Oh, God, wait till he wrote an op-ed. Wait till we get to this. He just, you know what, he needs to be put on no-speak patrol until that's all they can hope for the best. Not speak, do not write.
How's the chicken lady doing?
Nevada?
Oh, chicken lady doesn't look like she's going to win either, I don't think.
No. The Tea Partier looks... is it the Tea Partier?
There's another...
Yeah, the Tea Partier woman looks like she's going to be winning, which is very good for Harry Reid in Nevada.
I better brush up on this before I do an election analysis on the other team tonight. Chicken lady person. That
which
guy,
one is
Larry.
That?
I don't know. Which state is that?
Nevada. Oh, God.
All right.
Do you need a crash course? Oh, boy. Okay.
I sometimes do call Chris in a panic on my way to television. What's the thing about the... I'm drugged, for God's sake.
Give me that answer now.
Google this.
I'm looking. I'm looking.
Who's the woman in that state with the thing where they're doing that stuff? You know?
Yeah. Chris knows when it's the post cocktail hour scramble for some ass bites to say on television. That's our new phrase. Things you just pulled out of your ass.
Yeah. Ass bites.
Ass bites. All right.
Cooler
goodness.
Cooler flavor.
All right. Britt Hume. Gosh, I've missed the way he. No one can articulate a point like Britt Hume, right, Jim?
And they haven't been familiar.
One of our personal old golden oldies, completely unedited.
Yep.
That soundbite was not edited in any way.
Not at all. Wow.
All right, Britt Hume on O'Reilly.
This is a center-right country. This is a left-of-center president. And his agenda was bound to go down badly. People would have accepted that and gone along with it if the results were good. But the results have not been good, especially, as you point out, on the economy. And the result is that makes the policies all the more unpalatable.
As usual, he got it exactly backward. He's a center-right president, and we have a left-of-center country, except
yes.
They get
Thank
drowned
you.
Out by the loud right-wingers.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Okay, Glenn Beck on the Fox News on his usual progressive rant.
I know that progressives have tried to tell you otherwise, but you don't need to be a rocket scientist to lead America. You don't. You don't need a degree from Harvard or Yale. It's not a prerequisite for president. We have completely abandoned doing anything remotely close to common sense, and I can't find very many people with integrity today.
Oh. Oh, I see. So he'd be the only one, presumably.
Maybe he's running for president.
Clearly, progressives are Nazis. That's the only rational conclusion to draw. Nazis and or communists. And
now
or devout Muslim atheists.
Please hold your laughter and applause till the end of this. Here is Michael Savage on Who is Radical.
And what else would you really do to undermine a liberty-centered nation? You would try to put somebody on the Supreme Court who is A, unqualified, and B, a lifetime left-wing fanatic along the lines of Elena Kagan.
What?
A left-wing
you know,
fanatic?
She's suddenly wearing lipstick and makeup and jewelry, which I find, again, to be shockingly apt. When you know the parable of lipstick on a pig?
Nice. Yeah, only to be as attractive as Michael Savage. Yeah. That would,
what did your boyfriend, Allen Ginsberg, have to say about that?
Oh, Jim Louise.
Oh, I'm sorry, that was a long time ago, so it doesn't count.
Wow.
Maybe he's prettier with something in his mouth.
I'm sorry, I didn't even get to the last horrible part when I was like, what, left-wing fanatic? Where are those papers?
That would be great
if she were a lifetime left-wing fanatic.
Well, she was to the right of the Clinton administration.
Exactly.
God.
All right. I love it when people like Michael Savage and Rush Limbaugh rate different women's attractiveness, don't you?
She's not worthy of me, that pig with lipstick.
All right. You know what? I have a little indigestion. I need some sorbet. And then we have a couple of, because we have some Dick coming up, Dick Morris, and a couple more little bites. Here comes the helicopter of Right Wing World as we continue. 17 minutes after the hour, it's the Stephanie Miller Show.
It's all about fun. It's the Stephanie Miller Show.
Stephanie Miller. I want to be your papa. I want to be your mother and your sister too. I want to be your lover. I want to turn you on, turn you up. All my love will make you jump. Yeah.
It is the Stephanie Miller Show. Welcome to it. 22 minutes after the hour. Humorist extraordinaire Charlie Pierce coming up in just a few minutes. 1-800-STEP-12, the phone number. Walter Williams in for the honeymooning.
Someone is actually having sex with that. As we speak.
Someone's having sex with Rush Limbaugh right now. Okay.
You're saying you wouldn't tap that?
Someone's tapping that.
Hey, she's beautiful.
I didn't take his bait after he's been taunting me for months with his little coded love messages.
That's $100 million will buy you just about anything.
Guess so.
Stephanie Miller is a babe, by the way. I must point this out.
How do you possibly turn him down?
Stephanie Miller, who is a babe on some days, she knows what I mean.
Oh, I'm not really. Such a deceptive little minx.
What?
Okay. Walter Williams in for Limbaugh.
White House and allies set to build up the health care law. Now, because most Americans are against the health care laws. Mm-hmm. And so Congress buying off votes, Nancy Pelosi, Harry Reid buying off votes, they got it passed. They had a lot of intimidation.
Yes. Good idea. Let's talk about health care some more. Let's start the whole debate over.
But the vast majority of people out there were in favor of the components of health care.
Okay. Oops. All right. Prostitute toe sucker Dick Morris on the oil spill.
It was a totally foreseeable consequence of drilling a mile deep in the Gulf that there could be an explosion. Gas is flammable, explosive, and that oil could spill out. It was almost a certainty that at some point this would happen. You can blame BP all you want. And they're deserving it. We didn't elect BP. And this is an industry which the government closely regulates. And Barack Obama deserves to be excoriated for the failure to regulate this industry.
Wait a minute. So,
my God.
Suddenly he's pro big government regulation.
Really? Yes. Okay. So the two oil guys that put in those kind of lack of regulatory controls, he's against that too then, is he?
Yes.
I see.
Oh, it's just a disaster of epic proportions. Okay,
that's it for Right Wing World.
Good God.
Oh, here's Rand Paul's little op-ed, by the way. He compares himself to Martin Luther King.
Oh, In what way?
I'll get to it. He wrote an op-ed attempting to explain his widely condemned belief that private businesses should be allowed to turn away customers because of their race. Exactly what Martin Luther King thought.
Right. Huh?
In the piece, he compares himself to 19th century abolitionists and Martin Luther King Jr. and tries to argue that he is carrying on the legacy of their battles, such as fighting for restaurants to allow people to smoke.
Huh?
Oh,
Jim, would you like to devour that like a ferret, or should I? You see, smoking is a choice. Being black isn't, you moron.
Yeah.
And by the way, there's secondhand smoke, so you are hurting someone
exactly.
else.
Exactly. That's what
happened
to
Dana. You're hurting someone else by being black, you moron.
That's what happened to Dana Reeves. She never smoked in her life, but she did work in very smoky nightclubs, and they think that contributed to her lung cancer.
Yes.
But
he says in 2010 there are battles that need to be fought, and they have nothing to do with race or discrimination, but rather the rights of people to be free from a nanny state.
Right.
For example, I'm opposed to the government telling restaurant owners they can't allow smoking in their establishments.
So,
wow, thanks for playing really bad analogies.
When you go into the restaurant, make sure you're white, and then step out if you want to be black.
Yeah.
And thanks for playing really bad analogies.
Yeah.
Excuse me, could you step outside and be black so you don't bother
can
the other customers?
Be black in here. Thank you. We're trying to...
Some people are getting secondhand blackness. Stop it.
Like vanilla ice.
Yeah.
Jim Ward with the tip in, my friend. All right. So Robert Gibbs, White House press secretary, talking about the oil spill yesterday.
We are trying to measure 5,000 feet below the surface the amount of material that is coming up if you were to shake a Coke can.
Huh?
Wait. It sure don't look better to me. Did it look better to you?
No, it doesn't.
No.
The cap is capturing, they say, 500,000 gallons a day, anywhere from one-third to three-quarters of the oil spewing from the bottom of the sea, said officials.
Officials.
But the hopeful report was offset by a warning that the far-flung slick has broken into hundreds, even thousands of patches of oil that may inflict damage that could persist for years.
And there's footage of that boat pouring dispersants into the Gulf of Mexico, where... Obviously, there's got to be some gigantic plume of oil down there, but they're not.
The amount of oil captured is being slowly ramped up as more vents on the cap are closed. Crews are moving carefully to avoid a dangerous pressure buildup and prevent the formation of icy crystals. The slurpy thing again that thwarted a previous effort to contain the leak. The captured oil is being pumped to a ship on the surface. BP said it plans to replace the cap. Perhaps later this month or early next month with a slightly bigger one that will provide a tighter fit and thus collect more oil, which I asked earlier, Chris, why didn't they make that one in the first place?
John King got a chuckle out of that.
Well, it is. It's the old argument. Why don't they just make the whole plane out of whatever the black box is made out of?
Because then the plane would never get off the ground.
Yeah, it would be too heavy.
All right. Well, whatever. Listen, you and your engineering. knowledge. It will also be designed to allow the company to suspend the cleanup and then resume it quickly if a hurricane threatens the Gulf later this season. It gives us much better containment than we've got with the existing cap, said the BP. But, yeah, but don't ask me. I can't figure out. All I know is they're probably lying, whatever it is.
What I want to know is who are these people who sold short on BP stock before the explosion happened? And what did they know?
Yeah.
And when?
Let's have some Thad before we go.
I think there needs to be an expectation that we're going to be working in at least 4 to 6 weeks after that well is capped on the oil that's just presently overhead. And that doesn't account for what oil might come ashore that will elude us, so we'll have to deal with as far as the impact in the marshes.
All right, 29 minutes after the hour, Charlie Pierce of the Boston Globe will check in with us on his thoughts on the latest on the oil spill and the primaries today as we continue on the Stephanie Miller Show.
Stephanie Miller.
A smoking hot cocktail waitress with perfect breath.
It is the Stephanie Miller Show.
She knew you at Fung Lum, apparently.
34 minutes after the hour. 1-800-STEP-12, the phone number. Toll free from anywhere. It's Tuesday. That means time for our Tuesday pal. There's only one man now that understands. And that's the author of Idiot America.
Pierce.
Pierce. Charlie Pierce, the funniest writer in the world, from the Boston Globe.
Why is everybody always laughing with me?
Wah, wah. Everybody honk his nose twice. Good morning, Charlie Pierce.
Hi, guys. Thank you for putting up with my my semi-annual medical visit here. I had some blood taken, which, you know, is not that dissimilar an experience to reading a David Brewer column, so.
Happy primary day, my friend.
Hey, did I hear it right? Is Mama going to be on election coverage with Larry King?
Hello. Yes, at 9 p.m. Eastern and midnight Eastern. How about that there?
Now, there was a politician. We used to chase women together, you know, trying to get through the Cumberland Gap, if you know what I mean.
Are you trying to get me disinvited?
Dakota Territory, you're next. Hello.
All right. People prime for change vote in 12 states, Charlie Pierce.
Yes.
We have, we have two endangered Washington incumbents, of course. Let's go to Arkansas. What do you think is going to happen with Blanche Lincoln?
Well, it looks like, and by the way, I love this race being framed as a wild-eyed liberal, namely the lieutenant governor of Arkansas.
Right.
Which all that means is you get invited to, like, the you know, slightly less than good corn roasts, I think. But in any event, he looks like he's going to fall over the finish line ahead of her, doesn't he?
It does.
Yeah, it sure does. It sure does, but what, you know, here we are with the punditry now. So what does that mean, Charlie Pierce?
Well, I think it means that they have. I mean, I think they had an uphill battle in November there anyway. But I think that, you know, I wouldn't be at all surprised if the people backing Branch Lincoln backed the Republican in that race.
Right.
You know.
Sorry. Right.
Oh, Walmart. Oh, excuse me. I'm sorry.
Walmart.
What does, so now Harry Reid, you know, obviously in trouble, but, you know, who knows what's going to happen there, right?
He's drinking a big old martini today because he's the luckiest man in American politics right now. It looks like
right.
A chicken lady's going to finish third.
Yes.
I know.
Behind,
he's going to face Tea Party favorite Sharon Angle.
And those of us who do the occasional sports writing will tell you, Danny Tarkanian, the son of Jerry Tarkanian,
right.
The famous basketball coach at UNLV, Danny was one of his point guards, in fact, who's just kind of like an average, you know, Las Vegas lawyer schmo. Looks like he's going to finish second. But it does look like that they are going to nominate themselves a teabagger out there.
That's right.
Well, but here we go again. So this Sharon Hang, the teabagger, she wants to abolish the federal income tax code, phase out Social Security for younger workers, and eliminate the education department.
Dakota Territory, hello, you're next. Larry remembers being in a country where all that was true.
And it sounds like Nevada Republicans also going to punish Jim Gibbons, I think mostly because we can see the girl behind you in the car, you moron.
It's about time someone did it. I mean, jeez. I mean, that's been like a slow, you know, boiling sex scandal for about 15 years, it seems like.
One of the most hilarious ones ever, though, because you can see her behind him. What?
Get
what?
Down.
Okay, so she's in the car with me. I didn't go with her. What?
Get down. Under the dash. Oxford, you fool.
So, what?
Let's see. Do that? Well, never mind. Go ahead.
South Carolina. So, who's going to succeed Mark Sanford? So, Nikki Haley, of course, the Tea Party candidate with Palin's endorsement. In the past 2 weeks, two men have come forward to say they had trysts with her. What's going to happen with that race?
Well, trysts.
Oh, and then we have the other guy that called her a raghead. What's that?
She also has Jenny Sanford's endorsement, right? I believe. that's not a joke. I'm not being.
I think you're right.
Wow. Oh, I think you're right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I mean, I don't know what Ms. Palin, but because Jenny Sanford is as close to a secular saint down there as they have.
Yeah, that's true.
Right. So you may wind up with Nikki Haley running for governor.
So now Schwarzenegger's job. We have Meg Whitman. You guys have been getting inundated out there with ads, right?
She
spent
$70 million
of her own fortune, Meg Whitman, right?
Well, yeah, she and Carly Fornia have all, have pumped what? $7, $8, $10 million of their own money.
Of their own money, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, I mean, I can't imagine what the folks in L.A. have been going through because
Carly Fiorina with her disastrous career at HP and Sarah Palin's endorsement, how can she go wrong, I suppose?
Well, absolutely. I mean, Sarah Palin's never held a job long enough to run anything into the ground, so.
Yeah, that's true.
But both of those women will win the primaries. It's just, right. They're going to have a tough time in the general.
So it looks like Whitman's going to win the primary?
It looks like it, yes.
Wow. So we're going to be up late tonight, right? Because most of the big races are in central and western time zones.
I know.
South Carolina.
Yeah.
I know.
So you'll be on there for a while. You'll have, Larry's speed is going to be in your hands because he's going to be up very late tonight.
Actually, I think there's a guest host for the midnight. I don't even know who that is.
God. I hope they didn't get Ryan Seacrest for election coverage.
Oh, no.
He thought it was erection coverage.
He's going to bring Simon Cowell on with me, probably. That's the worst primary.
We're going to hear a lot more about it. I think tomorrow we're going to hear a lot more about anti-incumbent fever, as though there's like no difference between Bill Haller and this woman in Nevada.
Right. They always look for a storyline.
One is a nut and one is a lieutenant governor. Basically.
So, Charlie, loved your piece on Forget Tipper, Can We Please Stop Picking on Al Gore? You point out something that I think a lot of people have missed, that really explodes this myth of the liberal media, right?
Well, I mean, I wish I could say I was the trailblazer, but the inevitable Bob Summerbee was there long before I was. I just happened to have a couple of personal anecdotes that I saw. I mean, I did see him get booed in Iowa, which is astonishing to me. But the other thing was he really was. I mean, my business really disgraced itself in the coverage of that campaign, and the results were utterly terrifying.
Right. Well, you're right. They hated him because
I don't think anyone's quite atoned for that yet.
Right, you're right, they hated him because he was smarter than they were, and he demonstrated it, so they repeated lies, love story, love canal, invented the internet, they trafficked in utter nonsense. I love this, Chris Matthews, almost my favorite. Chris Matthews once spent an entire show wondering why Al Gore buttoned all three buttons on his sport coat and then went off on an authentically weird tangent about Navy guys who used to have three buttons on their pants. Get the net.
I never understood the last part. I mean, what used to drive me nuts about John Edwards prior to the thing that really drives me nuts about John Edwards was he always had like one button on his sport coat buttoned, which really looked dorky. Although apparently it gets you all the hot women, so
yeah.
or at least the new age videographers.
Anyway, yeah, but I mean, your mayor's a good point though. It's like leave him alone. Look at all the disasters that happened on Bush's watch, and
Yeah, I mean, it's a sad thing. I mean, I don't pretend to know what's going on there really, but they're going to have to go through it in public. At least the kids, their kids are grown and have their own lives, and it'll be tough on them, but at least they'll be prepared for it. Yeah, I think we leave the guy be. And I think, him being chuckled at by the various lightweights who cover politics. I don't know if you've seen now it's on the internet. It's all over the inner tubes now. The video from Joe Biden's water park fight where they all went and had like squirt guns with the guys they're supposed to be covering.
Yeah, super soakers, yeah.
I'd like once again to apologize to the American people on behalf of my entire business.
As a journalist, Charlie, I have to bring up Helen Thomas. Let's listen to the video. Hello.
Any comments on Israel? We're arresting everybody today. Any comments?
Tell them to get the hell out of Palestine.
Ooh. Any better comments? So where should they go? What should they do?
They go home.
Where's the home?
Poland.
So the Jews.
Germany.
Oh boy.
Oh boy.
And eventually she gets around to saying America.
Yes.
Yeah, she does.
Here's the only thing. My mom is 87, and you should see the.
She says, at some point, you know, I love Helen Thomas. I just went to see her talk at her book party, and she has a fascinating perspective that's really kind of unparalleled in terms of, you know, 5 decades covering this. But, I mean,
yeah,
it really is hard to defend that, isn't it?
She went over the top in a Saturn V rocket there.
Yeah, she did.
I mean, it really is time to leave the public stage.
She, you know what? She should have retired, you know, a long time ago, and her career would have been looked upon with awe. But now, you know, she's going to be remembered for this.
That was really bad.
Yeah.
I mean, that was inexcusably bad.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not mitigated by the fact, but it should not be forgotten that a lot of people say equally revolting things and still have wonderful careers.
Absolutely. Yes.
Right. But, you know, once again, Charlie, interesting now, here comes this myth of the liberal media. You know, Sarah Palin immediately says, oh, no one condemned this. I mean, Charlie, everybody condemned this, from MSNBC to CNN to, you know.
We just did. The four of us just did, by God.
Yes. Robert Gibbs yesterday talking about
those remarks were offensive and reprehensible. I think she should and has apologized.
So who gets the seat now? That's my interesting question.
That is the big question.
Yeah, I heard reporters are taking pictures of the empty seat yesterday, just, you know, because they're vultures by nature.
These are the same people who went to Joe Biden's water party.
Yeah.
You know, engaging in water sports with the people they're supposed to cover.
Oh!
I didn't say it.
Is that an Eric Massa joke? Wait a minute.
What? Snorkeling? Huh?
Actually, I think it's a David Vitter joke myself.
Yes.
Charlie, what is your take on, you know, the latest on the Gulf? I mean, I'm just a layperson, but I'm looking at it going, that don't look no better than it was.
Well, you know, I saw this really terrific woman on with Rachel Maddow last night.
The scientist,
woman from the University of Georgia.
Yeah,
and she was very judicious and very careful about what she said, and she scared the hell out of me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Nobody has any idea what's going to happen and where this stuff is going, let alone the other stuff they're putting in the water.
Yeah.
Well,
the dispersants and stuff like that. Yeah.
Although Haley Barbour says I can come on down. I have to be careful because my son is living in Mississippi right now.
Ooh.
But Haley Barbour says we can all come down and go swimming. You first, pal.
Yeah.
He says tar balls are no big deal. They come up every year from the Gulf of Mexico.
They come up every year from his esophagus, but that's not here. I think the other thing that I don't know if you saw the story yesterday in the Washington Post, Stephen Chu, the energy secretary.
Yes.
Was in a room. Stephen Chu, by the way, has already won his Nobel Prize.
Mm-hmm.
Was in a room with BP scientists and had suggested that when he was a grad student, I guess he had, and this is how smart this guy was. Most grad students are sitting around trying to figure out how to score with sophomores. This guy was figuring out how to use gamma rays to seal pipes. And he brought it up, and the BP guys laughed at him. And then they tried it, and it worked.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
Listen,
no, I mean,
guys, no laughing at the Nobel Prize winners now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's
I know. I mean, honestly, I was saying that earlier, Charlie. The only people smart enough to talk about this, Stephen Chu and Rachel Maddow. If you saw that interview, I love how Rachel tries to pretend that she's as dumb as the rest of us. She's like, now, I'm not a scientist, so let me get this straight. And then she, like, rattles off theory.
I'm only a Rhodes Scholar in economics.
Right.
Exactly. Then she rattled off something.
I'm just a kid from Western Mass with my own TV show.
Doggy.
I did like the woman from Georgia a lot because she was one of the scientists who really knows how to do things on television.
Yeah.
You know, explain it to like dummies like me and maybe the rest of us.
Yes.
But also by her very demeanor how serious it is.
Yeah. No,
you know,
exactly.
I'm not going to make any money out of this. I'm not, you know, this isn't going to be my career, but you know what? The Gulf of Mexico is really screwed.
Yeah, I know. Well, exactly. That's it. There's no two ways about it. Charlie Pierce, author of Idiot America, our Tuesday pal.
Hey, have a good time tonight.
Hello.
Hello. Goodbye, Charlie Pierce. Goodbye. Boston. Hello.
Goodbye.
All right. Goodbye, Charlie Pierce.
Goodbye.
All right. Dueling Larry Kings. Fine. 46 minutes after the hour, right back with the latest on The Spill as we continue on The Stephanie Miller Show.
You people make me sick.
It's The Stephanie Miller Show. Stephanie Miller.
What? It is the Stephanie. That's pretty. It is the Stephanie Miller Show. 51 minutes after the hour, 1-800-STEPH-12, the phone number. Toll free from anywhere. Tomorrow, Carl Frisch of Media Matters joins us to co-host Right Wing World, and Reverend Jesse Jackson talk about the what he's doing about the BP oil spill.
He's down there in the Gulf.
Mm-hmm. Von Seal in Asheville, North Carolina. You're on the Stephanie Miller Show. Owner of the world famous restaurant Bouchon, where Mama ate.
How did you remember that?
I'm not drunk. Hello, Von Seal. Hi, Von Seal.
Uh-oh. I don't think it's Mama Seal. This is Roz in Atlanta.
Oh. Oops.
That's weird. Okay. I lost that call, perhaps. I don't know. Hello, Roz. Go ahead.
Oh, well, this natural occurring oil that washes up on the shores of the beaches in the Gulf, it is not natural. It comes from the oil tankers when they bilge out those oil tanks occasionally, and it's highly illegal. But that's where it comes from. It's not natural at all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, exactly. Who can believe anything Haley Barbour says anymore, right?
Mean, it's absolutely.
Just ridiculous. All right, thank you. Nothing passes the laugh test, for God's sakes. They occur naturally in the Gulf, Tarbols.
All that oil there, that's just natural. Uh-huh. Just happens. Uh-huh. Just like a fish jumping out and right into your frying pan down there. Come on down, fishing's great. Don't even put up a fight. Can't wait to get out of the oil of water.
Time for some more. Dad!
We're no longer dealing with a large monolithic spill. We're dealing with an aggregation of hundreds or thousands of patches of oil that are going a lot of different directions. And we've had to adapt, and we need to adapt to be able to meet that threat.
He went on to say that he is pressuring BP to promptly compensate Gulf Coast residents. He said, we think they need to do that better and quicker, because here's a shock. Tony Hayward caught lying again. Yes, Tony, BP CEO.
You're a lying sack of crap. You're a lying, scheming, stinking, nasty sack.
Yeah, he said they're paying all of the claims, Jim, right away, as it turns out. Half. No. Not half.
All legitimate claims, he says.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's... Oh, by the way, don't forget, the reason to tune into CNN tonight is because you may hear this at some point.
Addis Ababa, hello. Do you have an electoral question for Stephanie Miller?
There you go.
What do you think about braces? Most people call them suspenders. I call them braces.
I
meet my new wife. I just married her 5 minutes ago.
I will be doing primary election coverage with Larry King. 9 p.m. Eastern and 11 p.m. Oh, boy, midnight Eastern. How's about that?
Are you going to be awake for the show, for this show tomorrow? The eponymous Stephanie Miller show?
No, barely. All right, Governor Bobby Jindal yesterday.
You have to smell it. You have to touch it. You have to see it for yourself to understand why we're so passionate about protecting our way of life.
Really?
Yeah, except that he's one of the Republican governors who are ready for drilling. They don't want to even wait to see what happened here. They just want to keep drilling.
Passionate about the oil company money flowing into their coffers.
Yes. Yes, indeed. Bobby Jindal again.
We had a coastal restoration project out there. We redirected our dredge to go ahead and start building a sand dune. Over 2 miles has already been done, 6 feet high. We saw, again, significant pooling of oil outside of that sand boom. Literally today, at least 15 birds were sent from that island, from that area to Fort Jackson and Plaquemines Parish, where hopefully they'll be cleaned and hopefully they'll be released after they've had a chance to recover. But for the state of Louisiana, this is one of the most obvious examples that sand booming, that sand dredging works. The idea is we don't want a drop of oil on our coast.
I saw something on TV, Chris, about trying to save animals. I mean, I don't know to what extent that's possible, but they were talking about trying to save sea life. And I don't know how you do that or where you bring them then.
It's a lot tougher in, marshland, which is, which makes up the vast majority of the Louisiana coast, than it was, in Prince William Sound, where it was all rock.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. There's all kinds of wildlife in amongst the grasses there, and it's hard to find them.
Yeah. Robert Dudley, managing director of BP.
So one step in that commitment after talking to the governor today, Billy, is to announce that BP will fund the full $360 million to construct the sixth berm. We understand this project, and the governor very eloquently described the benefits of it. I saw it firsthand. We understand the importance of this to Louisiana, the parishes, the cities, towns, and our responsibility to ensure that funding is made immediately.
And then Billy Nung, I keep saying his name
Nungesser.
Wrong. The Plaquemines Parish president.
Finally, we got somebody down here on the ground with BP. It's obvious in his response today that he cares. And we're going to see some things change. We're going to get out there and fight this, and we're going to win our coastline back. Thank you.
By the way, here's another reason the Elena Kagan nomination is going to be is so important to watch. 58%, Jim, that's nearly 60% of the federal trial judges in oil-affected areas have a stake in the oil industry.
Huh.
That doesn't seem good. 37 of the 64 active or senior judges in key Gulf Coast districts in Louisiana, Texas, Alabama, Mississippi, and Florida have links to oil, gas, and related energy industries, including some who own stocks or bonds in BP, PLC, Halliburton, or Transocean.
Interesting.
Oh, did you see the Arianna Huffington-Liz Cheney fight? I love me some Arianna. She is, seriously, I know we make fun of the accent, but it's actually a beautiful accent, and she says really good things in it that generally tend to be true.
Yes. I just wish she had called her a liar to her face.
Oh, she was on ABC's this week.
God.
She was trying to talk about the role Halliburton, obviously the company run by Dick, her father, has in the oil spill, but she was soon cut off by Liz Cheney, who rushed to defend her dad and Halliburton.
Of course.
Huffington said, right here we have the poster child of the Bush train of crony capitalism, Halliburton involved in this, and we haven't said about that. They were responsible for cementing the well. There was Halliburton after defrauded the American taxpayer hundreds of millions of dollars. Cheney goes, Arianna, I don't know what planet you live on, but that's not... Huffington, it's involved again. I'm living on this planet. Halliburton was involved in this. How can you say it's not? Jake Tapper said, well, Halliburton was cementing the pipe. Huffington, how can you say Halliburton has no relationship? Cheney said, her assertion that Halliburton defrauded the U.S. government, it did. It did.
Yes.
Huffington, Cheney said, it was a Bush-Cheney cronyism. That's the left talking point. Huffington said it was hundreds of millions of dollars in Iraq. Cheney, Arianna, it's absolutely not true. It's absolutely not true. See, this is the problem, Jim, with the mainstream media. So they, like, both of those are just opinions that are equally valid.
Equally valid. It's all the same.
We'll have to leave it there, Arianna.
We'll have to leave it there.
We'll see if that changes once Christiane Amanpour gets into the seat on ABC's this week.
Mm-hmm. Or when Mama gets into the seat with Larry King
there
tonight.
There you go.
Tune in, see you then.
Nice promo there, Steph.
Thank you. 58 minutes after the hour. That's it for us today. We'll see you tomorrow on the Stephanie Miller Show.